Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. We'll begin with international news. Even though there are reports that North Korea's military was examining its plans for attacking Guam, former Exxon CEO, now Trump Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said Americans shouldn't worry.
I think Americans should sleep well at night. I have no concerns about this particular rhetoric of the last few days.
Tillerson spoke to reporters on an airplane en route to Guam, where he stopped on his way back to the U.S. from Asia. He says North Korea poses no imminent threat despite reports that the nation has developed missile-ready nuclear weapons. This follows strong rhetoric from Donald Trump on Tuesday.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Tillerson, defending Trump today, says that kind of rhetoric was needed.
So I think the president, what the president was doing is sending a strong message to North Korea in language that Kim Jong-un would understand, because he doesn't seem to understand diplomatic language. I think the president just wanted to be clear to the North Korean regime that the U.S., you know, unquestionable ability to defend itself, will defend itself and its allies. And I think it was important that he deliver that message to avoid any miscalculation on their part.
North Korea, also known as DPRK, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, used strong rhetoric at the U.S. This after the U.N. Security Council voted to strengthen sanctions in response to the country's latest missile tests. The DPRK launched what it said were intercontinental ballistic missiles on July 3rd and July 28th. Kim Jong-un, the North's leader, repeatedly said the country's nuclear capabilities are crucial to its self-defense. On Saturday, there was an emergency meeting at the UN. 15 ambassadors unanimously adopted a resolution which clamps down on the country's exports. Deanne Penn explains.
The resolution blocks the DPRK from exporting items such as coal, iron ore, and lead, as well as seafood. It also prohibits states from entering into financial ventures with individuals or entities from the country, among other measures. The resolution was submitted by the United States. The country's ambassador, Nikki Haley, described it as a strong united step.
North Korea's irresponsible and careless acts have just proved to be quite costly to the regime. This resolution is the single largest economic sanctions package ever leveled against the North Korean regime. The price the North Korean leadership will pay for its continued nuclear and missile development will be the loss of one-third of its exports and hard currency. This is the most stringent set of sanctions on any country in a generation.
The Security Council also regretted that the DPRK has diverted its scarce resources to its nuclear program. The UN Humanitarian Affairs Office, OCHA, says more than half of the citizens there face major insecurities in food and medical care. The resolution condemned the country for pursuing nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles instead of the welfare of its people. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
What the resolution doesn't do is it doesn't sanction oil inputs critical to the workings of North Korea. In reaction to the sanctions, North Korea threatened retaliation against the U.S., quote, 1,000 times over, unquote. It vowed to never give up its nuclear arsenal. Today, North Korean authorities organized a giant rally as a show of support for their rejection of the latest round of UN sanctions. Tens of thousands of people packed a square in downtown Pyongyang for the event. It followed a familiar format of speeches from a balcony, with a crowd listening below, standing in organized rows interspersed with placards and slogans. Kim Kin-nam, member of the Political Bureau and vice chair of the Central Committee of the Workers' Party of Korea, told the crowd, "The U.S. and its allies have fabricated a sanctions resolution again, taking over the United Nations while picking on our ICBM test launch." The DPRK called the penalties a panicky response by an American bully. While North Korea's military said it was examining its plans for attacking the U.S. territory of Guam, home to Anderson Air Force Base, two U.S. Air Force B-1 bombers deployed from South Dakota flew from Anderson Air Force Base in Guam for a 10-hour mission this week, flying in the vicinity of Kyushu, Japan, the East China Sea, and the Korean Peninsula. The two B-1 bombers under the command of U.S. Pacific Air Forces joined their counterparts from South Korea and Japanese Air Forces in sequenced bilateral missions. Residents of the tiny Pacific islands say they're afraid of being caught in the middle of escalating tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. Meanwhile, Guam's governor is playing down the threat.
I've reached out to the White House this morning. An attack or threat on Guam is a threat or attack on the United States. They have said that America will be defended. And I also want to remind the national media that Guam is American soil. And we have 200,000 Americans in Guam and the Marianas. We are not just a military installation.
Today, Donald Trump's tweets were toned down. He said, "My first order as president was to renovate and modernize our nuclear arsenal. It's now far stronger and more powerful than ever before," Trump tweeted. Next, he tweeted, "Hopefully we will never have to use this power, but there will never be a time that we are not the most powerful nation in the world!" Exclamation point. Meanwhile, at a ceremony today marking the 72nd anniversary of the U.S. bombing of Nagasaki, Nagasaki's mayor Tomohisa Tao said the fear of another nuclear attack is growing. He urged nuclear states to abandon nuclear weapons, and he criticized Japan's government for not taking part in the global effort towards a nuclear ban. He wants Japan's government to change its policy of relying on the U.S. nuclear umbrella and join the Nuclear Prohibition Treaty as soon as possible. It was back on August 6, 1945, that the world's first atomic bomb was used in Hiroshima, killing 140,000 people. The bombing of Nagasaki was 3 days later, killing 70,000 more. People joined together at a ceremony at a peace park in Nagasaki today. At 11:02 a.m., when the bomb struck 72 years ago, people at the ceremony observed a moment of silence as the peace bell rang. Nagasaki's mayor said the nuclear threat will not end as long as nations continue to claim that nuclear weapons are essential for their national security. And he praised the atomic bombing survivors for their lifelong devotion to the effort. Miyako Taguchi has been living in the U.S. for 2 decades, but on the anniversary, she feels the pain of her homeland.
Oh, it's every year, this time of the year, my mind is getting so heavy, and then I cannot breathe, you know. I feel like a heat of the Nagasaki because I grew up there and I know how hot it was. And then it's very humid and hot. And then plus the atomic bomb was dropped, the heat was there too. So it's like you were living inside of the fire. So I have an image in my head I can get rid of, but the people like my mother or father experience it. It's not like you want to remember the memory. So I couldn't speak very well because I'm so like shaking. So
no, you speak very, very well, and I thank you so much. You're talking to a New York audience now. I'm Linda with WBAI News. So, what would you like people to know?
People know what happened. And then what's going on now, and what they can do. Because after the so many years, we still have 16,000 nuclear bombs in the world, and most of them here and Russia. And then these two countries, they are not going to get rid of, and we need to push that. We need to make the condition. They are no way they can keep anymore.
More than 175,000 have died in Nagasaki since the attack, including 3,551 in the last year, while over 300,000 of their peers have died in Hiroshima. The average age of the survivors is more than 81 years old. Many suffer from lasting effects of radiation. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Continuing with international news, the Yemeni people are in focus. Their well-being remains of utmost importance as they face an unspeakable humanitarian crisis. That's according to UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric, briefing reporters at UN headquarters this week. Over the weekend, reported airstrikes killed at least 12 civilians, including women and children. Matthew Wells has the details.
The UN humanitarian coordinator for Yemen, Jamie McGoldrick, expressed deep concern over the airstrikes on a house and a private vehicle. For more than 2 years, a Saudi-led coalition, including fighter planes, has been battling Iranian-backed Houthi rebels for control of the country. Mr. McGoldrick said that all parties to the conflict continue to show a disregard for the protection of civilians, and he urged fighters to uphold their responsibilities under international law. Suspected cholera cases have topped 400,000 in the country, while 20 million require humanitarian assistance, making it the world's largest food security crisis. Here's UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric.
All of the components of the UN in Yemen will continue to work with all the parties so as to bring some relief to the people of Yemen as they face an unspeakable humanitarian crisis. It is important that the international community not lose sight of the plight of the millions of vulnerable Yemeni men, women, and children. Their well-being remains of utmost importance.
Mr. Dujarric also provided an update on UN agencies' ability to access fuel for humanitarian operations. He said government assurances had been given that fuel will be moving this week from government-controlled Aden to the capital Sana'a, which Houthi rebels currently hold. He said authorities had also been asked for a plan to ensure regular delivery of aviation fuel for UN operations. Matt Wells, United Nations.
On Thursday, Code Pink is planning a protest at the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. against the ongoing war in Yemen. The Saudi-led coalition backed by the U.S. has been bombing Yemen for over 2 years. In other news, the Trump administration slapped more sanctions on Venezuela. They focus on current or former Venezuelan officials, including the brother of the late Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, for supporting President Nicolas Maduro's creation of a constituent assembly. Last week, the U.S. targeted Maduro with sanctions in a rare action against a foreign head of state. Those sanctions followed a previous round days before the planned vote for the new assembly that hit 13 current or former top officials in Maduro's government. A defiant Maduro mocked Trump after the initial sanctions. To a televised gathering of supporters, he shouted, "I don't take orders from the empire. Keep up your sanctions, Donald Trump." French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe confirmed that a suspect was shot by police and arrested in a dramatic chase today. This after a car smashed into soldiers outside a barracks in a Paris suburb. 6 people were injured. The suspected terror attack on the soldiers is the latest in a string of assaults that have hit France since January 2015, claiming more than 230 lives. Servicemen were part of the 7,000-strong anti-terrorism Sentinel force set up in January 2015, this after the attacks on the offices of Charlie Hebdo. Some experts believe that patrols should be withdrawn from the streets of Paris, where they are an obvious target for extremists. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Turning to local news, today was a good day for thousands with old summonses and warrants. In a single day, courts threw out over 640,000 arrest warrants for people who didn't pay tickets for minor offenses years ago in New York City. District attorneys in 4 of the city's 5 boroughs, in Queens, in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, and in the Bronx, joined together in today's effort. Warrants are a decade or more old, and they cite broken windows-style offenses such as riding a bicycle on the sidewalk or being in a park after hours. Brooklyn's District Attorney Eric Gonzalez.
Many of these cases they're 10, 15, 20 years old, and they stem from low-level summons activity. For example, someone riding a bike on a sidewalk, being in the park after dusk. And people receive these tickets for various reasons. Some people couldn't afford work, afford to miss work, to get to court to pay the ticket. Some people simply couldn't afford to pay the fine. Some people had child care issues. And there are many, many other reasons why people did not responsibly handle these summonses. However, we know that none of those people were ever told that failure to pay those fines would lead to an arrest warrant. And we also know that the court system at that time did not provide any mechanism to have the case recalled or offer a second chance to come down to court and take care of those summonses. And many, many people, and New York City has well over 1 million summons warrants, did not even know that there was a warrant for their arrest. And so we needed to do something about that, and the leadership here began speaking about how we could vacate and clear some of these summons warrants. I believe that someone who owes a $25 fine should not be arrested and brought down to central booking and spend 20, 24 hours in a cell next to a hardened criminal. That's not fair. And that's not justice. And so today's action removes the burden of possible arrest from tens and tens of thousands of people in Brooklyn. And throughout the city, even more warrants are being vacated. Another truth about these summons warrants is that although some of them may be able to be pursued 10 and 15 years later, the overwhelming majority of these cases can no longer be prosecuted in the courtroom. We cannot prove today that the person who received this summons 10 and 15 years ago was guilty of those fines. So while we're not dismissing the cases on the merit, we're dismissing them in the interest of justice, it's clear that the resources that would be required to prove these cases is an undue hardship, not only for the district attorney's office and the court system, but even for the police department. We need our police officers to be on patrol and not to be pulled off patrol because they came in contact with someone who had a minor summons warrant from 10, 15, 20 years ago. The time that it takes to arrest them, process the paperwork, and bring them down to central Brooklyn, I believe, keeps us less safe because those officers have been taken off the street. They're a burden to our system. As I've already said, we have well over 1 million of these summons warrants in the city of New York. 25% of those were in Brooklyn. But not only are they a burden to the system, they're a burden to the individual lives of the people who have them. We understand that people who have these summons warrants are impacted in their daily lives in small ways that really devastate them from moving forward. It impacts them in housing, when they're applying for housing, when they're applying for public benefits, it impacts them. For many people, when they're applying for employment, background checks will reveal warrants from 10 and 15 years ago. So it's a real burden on people. And if they come across law enforcement at a traffic stop, when they are reporting a crime, the police have no choice but to arrest them because they have this warrant. Today, by removing these warrants, we remove that burden off the system, but we also remove the burden from people. And so many of these folks are surprised when they're arrested. They did not know they had a warrant for their arrest.
The Brooklyn DA says vacating these summonses is an important step forward in the relationship between law enforcement and community members, that these low-level, broken windows-style summonses were a real divide.
All rise. SAPV, Indian Portage County of King, is now in session. The Honorable Frederick Arriaga is presiding. Be seated. Come to order. Parties, please state their names for the record.
Good morning, Your Honor. Eric Gonzalez, Assistant acting district attorney for the people of Brooklyn. Pleasure to be here with you this morning, Judge.
Good morning, Mr. Gonzalez.
Good morning.
New York City Council Speaker Marisa Markovic.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Letitia James, public advocate and attorney at law.
Good morning, Your Honor. John Ryan, attorney in charge of Legal Aid Society.
Good morning.
Good morning. Andrea Nieves, Brooklyn Defender Services.
Good morning.
Douglas Appel, APPEL, 16 Court Street, Brooklyn, New York, representing the
It's a very emotional day, I have to say. And
New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark-Vividito was in the Brooklyn courtroom today while the summonses were being dismissed.
I know it's historic, obviously, the fact that we were able to really get the support of the administration and to get the support of the DAs, 4 out of the 5 in this large city, to be able to vacate, you know, warrants that are 10 years or older is an incredible feat, you know, and I think that it really strikes at the core of what the Reverend was talking about and others, this idea of redemption, this idea of second opportunities, this idea of fairness. I mean, this was really unfair that after a warrant that's been on the books for 10 years for a low-level nonviolent offense, that we're wasting resources of the city, the precious resources of our NYPD and our court system to be chasing this. So this has many layers of importance, and you know, from the issue of fairness, from the issue of resources, from the issue of just a system that just historically is entrenched within equity and trying to eradicate that. I mean, there's a lot here, and I think it's a model and a message that I hope other cities would also consider moving forward. We have to be able to give people an opportunity to fulfill their potential, and having a 10-year-old warrant, not being able to move forward on getting an apartment or a job, or it has other implications, is truly, truly the definition of unfairness.
Today is an opportunity for real change.
New York City public advocate Tish James.
And most of these warrants cover a very dark period in our history, and that is the aggressive, broken window enforcement period. And the city's draconian policy has also impacted officers who have no discretion when it comes to bench warrants. They must arrest individuals with warrants and put them through the system. And I have seen grandmothers and grandfathers and individuals put in the system who have never had any contact with the criminal justice system, law-abiding individuals who respect the law, but unfortunately, they were subject to a really draconian policy. How we handle and process low-level offenses has not been productive or cost-effective for our city, for taxpayers, our community, the criminal justice system, or even our police. But the good news is that we've already begun to change, and today is a major step towards making our justice system more fair and equitable for everyone. Today, 700,000 old warrants will be dismissed throughout the city. That's 700,000 fewer cases clogging up our courts and 700,000 opportunities for a fresh start. I keep in my thoughts and my prayers my neighbor and my friend, the late Ken Thompson, who first piloted amnesty for those with old bench warrants. And District Attorney Eric Gonzalez has continued his work and his legacy and has gone even further. And I thank him for his commitment to justice today.
Again, DA Gonzalez.
Well, any summons warrant that's still active that's less than 10 years old will still be handled by the District Attorney's Office as they come in. But anyone can resolve these tickets, and I recommend that anyone who has that knows that they have a summons warrant to come into the courthouse and have the warrant vacated, and we'll deal with the underlying summons.
Just to reiterate, 640,000 arrest warrants, which are 10 years old or older, for minor broken window style offenses were dismissed today in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, in Queens, and in Manhattan. And finally, 5 transgender members of the U.S. military, including Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, sued Donald Trump today. They challenged his ban on transgender people serving in the armed forces. On Twitter, Trump said on July 26 that the U.S. government won't accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the military. It was a reversal of Pentagon policy that the lawsuit said was made without consulting senior military commanders. The surprise announcement, citing health care costs and unit disruption, appealed to some in Trump's conservative political base, but it created uncertainty for thousands of transgender members, many of whom came out after the Pentagon said in 2016 that it would allow transgender people to serve openly. The White House did not immediately respond to the lawsuit. It was filed in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, August 9th, 2017. The news was produced with Deanne Penn, Matt Wells, Akeem Killick, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.